Bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI AM 91, Seattle.
CBS News. President Ford has asked Congress for a total $497 million in military aid to Cambodia. I'm Jim Kilpatrick, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Mr. Ford asked Congress to increase aid to Cambodia by an extra $22 million, which would bring the total to $497 million until the end of June. The New York Times cites diplomatic sources who say that may be more than the Cambodian government needs during that time period. The Times report suggests that Mr. Ford may be trying to establish a buffer stock of arms for next year when a war-weary Congress can be expected to provide less aid for Southeast Asia. In the fighting in Cambodia, rockets struck an elementary school Thursday. The latest from Mike Santosky in Phnom Penh.
The final death toll from the Thursday rocket attack on Phnom Penh has been put at 18. 14 of the victims were school children who died after one of the rockets scored a direct hit on their classroom. The scene at the school was one of incredible carnage. Blood spattered blackboards, books and purses strewn all over the floor, huge pock marks where jagged pieces of shrapnel tore through the wall. People from all over the city came to stare in silent litany long after the incident. It was too horrible to believe, said one man. Nothing worse could ever happen. Mike Petalki for CBS News, Phnom Penh.
More CBS News after this.
The California Prune Advisory Board presents the Smothers Brothers.
Thank you very much. Now my brother Tom would like to sing his favorite song, the Prune Song.
I can't.
What do you mean you can't?
I can't relate to this song.
You have to sing the Prune Song.
I can't. See, my mother always gave my brother prunes, and I never got any prunes because she wanted him to be healthier.
Now, wait a minute. She gave you the same vitamins, iron, same everything I got, you got.
That is not true. She gave me the pits.
You ate prune pits.
I didn't eat those prune pits.
Well, what'd you do with them?
Fed them to my chicken.
Oh, your chicken ate the prune pits.
Yeah. Made really funny eggs with a really hard yolk. Kind of wrinkled. You had to stew these eggs.
All right, Tommy. I
would really have prunes.
Sing the prunes.
I even prefer to have the pits.
We keep sing the prunes.
No matter how young a prune may be, it's always full of wrinkles.
California prunes, loaded with vitamin A, niacin, and iron. The funny fruit that does so much for you. Still, about 6 cents a serving.
The House Ways and Means Committee has approved a $20 billion tax relief measure. The anti-recession bill, pushed through the committee in just 4 days, was approved 28-5. Action by the full House is expected a few days after its return from a 10-day recess. The measure provides an $8 billion tax refund in payments to individuals up to $200. Most of the rebates will go to low and moderate income Americans, but higher income wage earners could receive a rebate of $90 to $100. The committee also approved almost a $4 billion tax cut for businesses and another $8 billion tax cut on 1975 income, as Chairman Al Ullman explains.
Individual income earners are going to receive a reduction in withholding, which means they'll get an increase in take-home pay. So we think it'll be a very substantial increase in purchasing power on the part of the American people, and it'll go to the lower and middle brackets, the people who will spend it. We think it's a good package.
Ullman says the 1975 tax cut will also aid mostly low and middle-income Americans. More CBS News after this.
Hello, I'm Helen Hayes. There's something very important happening in this country. High school students from 60 nations are living here for a year in the United States. They're learning about us, about our families, our schools, our communities. And we're learning from them. It happens through American Field Service, AFS, and the thousands of people who give their time to help others. Volunteers help find families to host students. They arrange activities in the community and help raise scholarship funds. AFS is an exciting and rewarding activity that deserves a place in your town or your city. To find out how you can help bring an international experience to your school and community, write AFS, 313 East 43rd Street, New York, New York. That's AFS. 313 East 43rd Street, New York, New York.
In Peru, government troops put down scattered looting and disorders with gunfire Thursday. The action came in the aftermath of a police strike that developed into rioting and left at least 47 people dead. More on the story from Frank Menitzes in Lima.
More of Peru's national police appear to be returning to work after the revolutionary military government named a new commander of the force. The police went on strike last Monday, demanding a pay increase. Naming the new commander was expected to ease the way for a return to normality, broken by rioting, looting, and shooting Wednesday. Throughout the country, a state of emergency remained in force with a 30-day suspension of constitutional rights. The curfew in the capital city of Lima was increased by 2 hours. No explanation was given for the increased curfew, but the military government stressed every necessary measure will be taken to restore calm and order. Frank Menitzes for CBS News, Lima, Peru.
The Canadian government has announced a major program aimed at cutting energy consumption. The proposals range from reduced speed limits in veteran-sited buildings to a modified fee schedule for electricity, natural gas, and car licenses. Jim Kilpatrick, CBS News.
For Seattle, Tacoma, Bellevue, Everett, and vicinity, why, mostly cloudy through tomorrow. Showers and a few periods of partial clearing tomorrow night and Saturday. Nighttime lows in the mid-30s, and the daytime high should be in the mid-40s. Not much change as far as the general temperatures are concerned. Wind should stay northeast to east, 15 to 25 miles an hour, with higher gusts and the chance of measurable precipitation, 70% tonight, 80% tomorrow, a 60% chance tomorrow night. And last reported was 40 degrees in downtown Seattle and 40 at the airport. Next, CBS Mystery Theater. And tonight, it's a Robert Louis Stevenson swashbuckling thriller called The Sire de Maltois d'Or. Your host, E.G. Marshall, next on CBS and KIXI Seattle.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. It's a fitting quotation to begin this story. The time is out of joint. Oh, cursed spite that ever I was born to set it right. Hamlet, William Shakespeare. And this is a story of the century in which he was born, the 16th. Young Will Shakespeare was an apprentice in his father's butcher shop. Queen Elizabeth ruled England, and Henry III presided over an uneasy France, torn apart by religious wars between the Huguenots and the Catholics. These were times bloodier than today, when no street was safe at night.
Damn, it's the night guard.
What matter? We have safe conduct.
On a dark night like this, you think these thieves in livery will stop to see them?
You're right. They may even be Huguenots.
If we can just reach that next corner unseen, we have a chance. Come! Oh, do not.
What?
I stepped on a pebble, my sword against the wall.
Stand and deliver, whoever you are. Lift the torches.
Run, run for your life, Denny.
Hold! Are we fired?
Pay no heed.
Fire!
Oh, dear, I'm hit.
Oh, they've blown my whole side out to the right before they reload. Then at the end of the twisting lane, to the left, a door. If God or love is good, behind it, you may find refuge.
Our mystery drama, The Sire de Maletroit's Door, was especially adapted from the Robert Louis Stevenson classic for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Michael Wager. It is sponsored in part by Contac, the 12-hour cold capsule, and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
You don't see many people putting salt in their beer nowadays. Not that there's anything wrong with salt on radishes or French fries, but man, not in the king of beers. Truth is, the only thing salt can do for Budweiser is make it salty. an unwise thing to do to the only beer in America that's Beechwood aged. Unsalted Budweiser has become the most popular beer in the world. That's because in brewing Bud, the Budweiser brewmaster goes all the way for a taste, a smoothness, a drinkability you'll find in no other beer at any price. And something else you can take without a grain of salt. The fact that when you say Budweiser, you've said it all. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Here's a medical puzzle. A person has a deadly disease, yet leads a normal life. How is it possible? The answer is chemotherapy. Through this treatment, thousands of cancer victims regain active, productive lives despite their cancer. Many of these people can continue in their jobs for years, while the anti-cancer drugs, which we call chemotherapy, control their disease. But many types of cancer remain difficult to control. Through research, the Chemotherapy Foundation is stimulating the development of new drugs. More types of cancers will someday be controlled. The question is not if, but when. You can help by contributing to the Chemotherapy, that's Chemo, C-H-E-M-O, Therapy Foundation, Box 8, New York, New York, 128. That's the Chemotherapy Foundation, Box 8, New York, New York, 128. This is a public service message from the Chemotherapy Foundation.
The weapon you heard fired earlier was the arquebus, the precursor of the musket and our modern rifle. Not the weapon of the ordinary gentleman of this century, whose sidearms were the rapier, a heavy weapon built two-edged for slicing and slashing with a sharp point for thrusting. Roger Chandiver and Denis de Beaulieu were only so armed when they were attacked, leaving Roger mortally wounded on the cobblestones of Chateau Landin. But let's begin with the other, Denis de Beaulieu, earlier that same evening, as he is finishing a flagon of wine with the landlord of the Auberge Tête du Port.
I beg your honor to stay off the streets of Chateau Landon at dark.
Why, good host, it's scarcely dusk. What have I to fear?
In the France of 1575, many things, thieves, cutthroats, and as bad as all of them, the guard itself. Most of all, the times. Half the city is still at war.
What? With a truce proclaimed?
Piece of paper.
But I have a safe conduct.
It's also just a piece of paper.
Well, landlord, I thank you for your kind concern. May this reward you sufficiently.
Oh, the young gentleman is most generous.
Well, come with me to the door and point out to me, while the light lasts, the way I must go to my friend Chandivale's house.
Rue de Beauzard, was he not?
Ah, that's the street.
See you the church spire where the bell for evening mass is tolling?
High on the hill to the right.
The same. They mark you very close to it, the chateau.
I've marked it before. What great lord lives there?
The Sire de Maletroit, owner of this fief, and lands beyond as far and further than the eye could reach. Woe betide any man who should cross his path.
Well, I'm not likely to, since I'm here in your city only for the night. Pretty, direct me on my way whilst I can still see to trace it.
I'm sending you over the hill rather than around, for the lanes twist and turn enough to set one's head spinning. But if you steer between the church and the chateau, on the other side of the hill is a straight avenue, and three streets down, you will find the Rue des Beaux-Arts.
The chateau to my left, and as always, the church to my right, and I pass between them.
Ah, justement.
Don't worry about the dark. I'll not tarry for mass. I'd be too late anyway.
You were a long time at confession, Blanche.
Oui, monsieur.
What can a young bird, not even out of its nest, and a Maletroit at that, have to confess that takes up so much time?
Oh, please, Uncle.
Fear, niece. I'm too good a Catholic to invade the confessional. And let me hand you to the coach.
Thank you.
Eh bien, Damon, to the chateau. But why so tearful, my dove?
Oh, not tearful, just tired.
Tired? Of what, little one? Life? An arduous day? Père Maillot's usual droning of the mass, or a month of deception?
Deception?
The circles we travel in are small, Blanche. The least pebble dropped in the circumscribed pool of our life sets up waves. Among the cognoscenti, there are no secrets, such as...
Oh, my hand, you're hurting me.
Loosen it, so that I may see what worm my little bird has caught.
I don't know what you mean.
I'm afraid you do. But as always, those embroiled in scandal are the last to hear. In the Maletroit family, that word does not exist, will not be allowed to exist. Open your hand or I will crush it open.
He meant no harm.
I shall be the judge of that. Open.
Oh.
A spilled paper, badly crushed. A billet doux, no doubt.
What are you going to do?
Read it and decide. We're almost home. I think I shall defer my answer till we are behind the walls of Chateau Maletroit. Go to your quarters, mademoiselle. Send the maîtresse de chambre to me at once.
But if only I could...
Obey me. Nobody crosses my wishes.
Oui, monsieur. As you desire.
Père Maillot. Père Maillot!
Have a service, Messiah. You are late.
My niece wished to make confession. Had she chosen you, my mind might have been eased more quickly.
Even for you, Messiah, how could I break the seal of confession?
The question can be begged. It isn't necessary. I know now what is and what has to be done. I have instructions for you... The maîtresse de chambre, and send for my ironsmith immediately. There is much to be done before I set my trap, and small time to accomplish it. But once I have caught my fly, he will dance to my tune, or suffer the consequence.
Darkness had dropped faster than I could have anticipated. And as I climbed the twisting, meandering streets, I almost was sorry I'd not come by horseback. Fortunately, against the night sky, my twin stars stood outlined, the chateau and the church. Actually, approaching the church, the torches of those leaving Mass were a beacon to lead me on. I even hesitated a moment at the sight of one beauty escorted to a carriage before passing on. And arriving at last on the downslope of the hill on the other side at my friend Chandivert's lodgings.
Ha! And one more for the road.
I drink not to that, but to you, mon Dieu.
To both. Ah, God save me for any others, and punish me if this should be a lie. But I swear by the winged archer himself, or any comparable saint, if this were any other knight, I would make no end of it.
I understand. Where there's a lady...
Ah, but such a lady. If I dared divulge all, but... Ah, listen, midnight. She'll be here within the hour.
I need no explanation, dear friend. I love the ladies as much as you. Indeed, on my way here, as I passed the church square, there was one who caught my eye.
Oh, damn our Breton weather. Here comes the rain again. Can we go?
At your heels or by your side, always.
We had so much to talk about. Except this special night.
Forget it. Stay for your assignation. I'll find my way back to the inn. Our paths will cross soon again.
Oh, damn the weather. I'll see you over the crest of the hill. From there, can you find your own way down?
I found my way up.
Aye, well enough, even by partial daylight. But in God's name, step quietly and carefully. Trust no one. Keep to yourself. No one. These are bad times when everything runs awry.
You lead. I promise to be as careful as any churchman will have to be.
There's the church to your left. Just follow this street we're on. Keep remembering to bear always to your right and downhill, and you'll be at the inn within a quarter hour. But Move quietly.
Au revoir, Jean Hiver.
Go in peace.
As with you.
Just one thing.
Shh.
The night guard.
What matter? We have safe conduct. Oh,
on a night like this, you think these thieves in livery will stop to look at them?
You're right.
We can just reach the next corner. We may have a chance. Unseen. Come. Do not.
What?
I stepped on a pebble. My sword hit against the wall.
Stand and deliver, whoever you are. It's the torch.
Run. Run for your life, Dennis.
Hold. Are we fire?
Pay no heed. Run.
Fire!
Oh, dear. I'm hit.
Was it?
Too late. They've blown my whole side out. The left. The heart. I'm done for, Dennis. Run down the hill. Keep toward the Sire de Maltois Chateau. They may be less anxious to follow you there. Why?
He's a power.
More than that, I cannot say. Just try his door.
There was nothing I could do for Jean Hiver. My dearest friend was dead. There was no treating with a pack of hounds that followed us. I fled from them, following the tortuous alleys, ever conscious of their footsteps after mine. Rushing down a lane scarce wide enough to accommodate myself, I suddenly found myself faced with a waist-high terrace, which I was about to leap, till some instinct or the rising moon stayed me. Small wonder. On my side was a 4-foot wall, but had I all leaped it, I would have dropped 40 feet to a craggy field of stone. I could hear the mob behind me. I was prepared to face them with sword and poignard, but the firearms I could not challenge.
Tor.
To the left of me was a portico, and in its shadow a door. Any port in a storm. At least with something against my back, I could fight. I drew my sword, ducked into the shadows, and thrust my back against the door. And to my amazement, it gave way behind my weight, opening to let me into possible safety. As it gave behind me, I heard the hound pack on my trail. I thought to close the door, not quite in order to observe what had happened outside, but as I pushed gently, of a sudden, as though it was whisked from my hands, it thudded shut. From what pursued me, I was safe. That door could stand a battering ram. But a new and strange threat had developed. I had no desire to close the door all the way shut. It had been snatched from my hands with no control from me. I stood in a small hall with a staircase, rising out of the gloom. I turned to the door. It was as smooth as silk. No way of reopening it. I was trapped. My only way out was up the staircase before me. I had no choice. I started to mount, drawing my only weapon and wondering only if it could protect me and what I faced when I reached the top of those steps. For some reason, a premonition of unnamed terror ran like rat feet down my spine.
What monstrous figure awaited Denis de Beaulieu at the top of the steps? What swirling ghost from the underworld or some other world threatened his immortal soul? I can at least report some of that as we return shortly with Act Two.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love.
But give your car to Condor. The sooner the better.
Six or three or one. That's the question when you catch the common cold. Then take 12-hour Contac. You need six cold tablets, two every 4 hours, or three cold pills, one every 4 hours, or just one Contac capsule. For up to 12 hours, continuous relief from sneezing, congestion, drips. The tiny time pills do it. For aches and fever, the others contain aspirin. Contac doesn't. Your cold, your choice. Six or three or one. Give your cold to Contact, the number one cold medicine in the whole world.
Give your cold to Contact.
Six or three or one. Take Contact only as directed.
Blind and successful?
Well, we're here to tell you. There are lots of us all over the country. We're blind, but we're just like you.
I'm a senior clerk at the Downstate Medical Center. Part of my life just is getting up and going to work and performing certain functions on my job. I look at the NFB in the same respect that there's a commitment and an obligation. That to be able to give of yourself and to know that somewhere it will help others, and perhaps in turn that someone else who gives a little may in some way eventually help you. And when it all comes together, it can produce something, you know, very good and very big for the benefit of everyone.
For further information, get in touch with your local affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind, or contact me, Kenneth Jernigan, President, National Federation of the Blind, 218 Randolph Hotel Building, Des Moines, Iowa, 50309. This message presented as a public service by this station and the members of the National Federation of the Blind.
What did face Denis de Beaulieu as he entered a large room of polished stone with arras-draped openings on three sides and two large windows on the fourth was a little old gentleman in a fur tippet seated by the fireplace in a high-backed chair. The great stone fireplace was between the windows, and carved into it the arms of the Malatois.
Seeing those arms, I was immensely eased and felt myself in good hands. Still winded from my running, we looked silently at each other for a second or two. In the brief exchange of glances, although the man was smiling and relaxed, I found myself tensing again. Something about him, the peaked eyebrows, the small, strong eyes, so quaintly evil in expression, belying the beautiful white hair, hung straight all about his head, like a saint's.
I am Alain, sire de Malétroit. Pray, step in.
I am indebted to you, sir. Pray, pardon this unwarranted intrusion.
Oh, not at all. I've been expecting you since I heard the church bell toll.
Me, Messiah?
Yes.
Oh, I'm afraid this is a double accident, sir. I'm not the person you suppose me to be.
Really?
No, it seems you were expecting a visitor.
Assuredly, I was.
But I can assure you that nothing was further from my thoughts or more contrary to my wishes than my arriving here. I am loath to let you labor under some misapprehension.
Oh, tut-tut. If I do, surely it is the privilege of old age, and all will be straightened out in due time. Bring my guest a cup of spiced wine. You will join me, young man.
Messiah,
I have no desire to force you.
I'm wondering about that. Behind the arras your servant has opened, I see what appears to be a small army of pikesmen and arquebusiers.
I am old, as I have remarked, and these are perilous times. Even the nobility needs protection. The wine, sir.
I accept your courtesy.
The wine, don't bring it.
If only to explain my presence satisfactorily and perhaps be accorded an explanation of why it failed to surprise you.
In good time.
I was visiting a friend, and on my way back to the inn, my friend accompanied me. We were set on by an armed band. Huguenots, assassins, the guard, I know not. But that their intentions were violent and criminal is attested to by the fact that my friend was shot and killed. I fled with him in hot pursuit. Unfortunately, picking this cul-de-sac, I saw your door and thought with my back against it to be able to make some fight for my life. But as I leaned against it, it opened with my weight. And I gladly entered to put it between myself and the assassins who would have killed and robbed me also.
A pretty story.
You don't believe me.
Does it matter so much after all?
But nevertheless, that is what happened. Once they had searched without finding me, I would have left, but your door...
Ah, yes, my door. A little piece of ingenuity.
No question of that. It fled from my hand as if someone had pulled it shut from the outside. And I
could find no means of opening it from the inside.
Yes, most ingenious, most ingenious. A hospitable fancy.
Hospitable?
To be sure. You arrived uninvited, but believe me, very welcome.
You persist in error, sir. There can be no question between you and me. I am a stranger in this countryside. My name is Denis de Mazur de Beaulieu. If you see me at your house, it is only as I have told you.
My young friend, you will permit me to have my own ideas on that subject. They probably differ from yours at the present moment, but time will show which of us is in the right. Ah, here comes our wine. Let us enjoy it while the heat is still in it.
We sat in silence while the servant served the wine and left. Again, I saw the armed men beyond the arras. I was conscious in the silence now of voices. One male and one female hurriedly gabbling as if in prayer behind the third arras. Meanwhile, the old gentleman surveyed me over the rim of his cup from head to foot. I was convinced I was dealing with a lunatic and a dangerous one. I could stand it no longer. I got to my feet, clapping my hat on my head.
You haven't finished your wine.
Nor do I intend to. This is sheer madness. If you're in your wits for all your proffered hospitality, you affront me grossly.
Oh, dear, dear, dear.
My conscience is clear. You've made a fool of me since the first moment. I'm leaving. If I cannot make my way out in a more decent fashion, I'll hack your door in pieces with my sword.
Sit down, you rogue, and listen to me. Do you fancy that when I had that little contrivance made for the door, I stopped short at that?
I've already seen your small army behind the arras armed to the teeth.
Exactly. So if you prefer to be bound hand and foot until your bones ache, make one move to depart. If you choose to remain free, agreeably conversing with an aging gentleman, why then, resume your seat. Finish your wine in peace, and God be with you.
So, I'm a prisoner.
I state the facts. Now, let us finish the wine before it is cold. It serves to make the waiting more agreeable.
But what? What are we waiting for?
You entered from one arras-covered arch. You have seen that the main house lies behind the second. We are waiting for what is taking place behind the third.
Yes, but what?
For a lady to make up her mind. Perhaps the longest wait a man can endure. À votre santé, mon brave. Pick up. It passes the time.
Again we sat, facing each other, the sire relaxed, patient, but for all his tiny stature and age, forbidding. For myself, I found myself downing the wine at a gulp, almost choking on it as my throat tightened with some unknown dread. I faced battle with less fear in my heart than I felt in this bewildering game whose purpose I knew not. A nightmare of nightmares. I turned to the arras as if by staring at it hard enough, I could divine what was happening behind it.
Daughter, in the name of the Lord Almighty, will you truly confess and admit to your sins?
I tell you, Père Maillot, I have not sinned.
You have lusted after men, young men who feast their eyes on you.
Oh, how can I, whom held here in the chateau, a virtual prisoner since my father and mother died?
You chose the most sinful place of all. Before the altar at the Holy Mass.
But it is the only time I leave these walls. If I lift my eyes to look at the world outside, is that a sin?
You have done more than look. You know the sire intercepted a communication to you from some man today. What was his name?
I know not.
Are you sure?
Would I lie to you, my father?
Sin leads to sin. I can look in your eyes and tell you know his name.
Even if I did, I would not tell you.
Or the sire?
Nor my uncle. I know how cruel he can be.
How cruel both of us can be to save your immortal soul. Would you prefer we found the answer with a thumbscrew or the iron bolt?
Oh, no, you would not. My uncle would not.
Do not be too sure. The honor of the Maltois name has never been sullied.
As the last of the line, save yourself. The sire will never permit it to be. The name of the young man that passed you the note?
No. I have done naught to feel shame for. Nor if there were such a cavalier, neither is he. The note, I cannot deny, it exists. But everything else is your foul imagination and my uncle's. I will not let you harm an innocent man because of who I am.
So be it. I commiserate with you, my daughter in the church. You have brought your punishment upon your own head. I go to inform your uncle.
The silence between the Sire de Maletroit and myself, broken only by the intriguing murmur of voices behind the arras whose words could not be heard, had become intolerable. I was just about to speak when the third arras was pushed aside. The tall priest, his brows knitted in anger, his cool face set doggedly, came into the room. He stopped briefly in surprise, seeing me, favoring me with a long, keen stare, then crossed to the side, dropping his voice so I could scarce hear his words.
Is she in better spirit, Father?
I think she is more tractable, more resigned.
De Beaulieu, this is my père familial, attached to my family. Père Maillot, Demoiselle de Beaulieu, let us together repair to the chapel to meet with my niece and settle our affairs once and for all.
Common decency required, I offer my arm to the Sire de Maletroit, who accepted it without question and limped with me along with the priest's vigorous stride. Through the arras, we entered a small chapel, pierced by many little windows shaped like stars. On the steps of the altar knelt an incredibly beautiful young girl, dressed as a bride.
I have brought a friend to see you, my child. Turn around and give him your pretty hand. It is good to be devout, but necessary to be polite, my niece.
Uncle, please, don't embarrass me anymore. Whatever you ask of me, I will do. Only one thing I will resist to my dying breath. I will not tell you the young man's name. He is innocent of any wrongdoing. Pierre Maillot has threatened me with the thumbscrew and the boot. Mayhap in my agony, you could force his name from me.
Fortunately, my cher, that is no longer necessary. We have the young man here.
What?
I asked you to be polite and turn around and give him your hand.
From the moment we had entered, I held my breath. The setting was only too obvious. The bride awaiting the groom. And it was not hard to realize that I must be cast in that role. I could scarce believe what was happening to me and was damned if I would be forced into a captivity I neither deserved nor would endure. Until the girl herself turned to me and said,
"That is not the man. Uncle, that is not the man."
Of course not. I expected as much. It was so unfortunate that you could not remember his name.
I swear I have never seen this gentleman before.
I am distressed to hear it. But it is never too late to begin. I had little more acquaintance with my own late lady before I married her, which proves that these impromptu marriages often work for the best in the long run.
Marriage? Messire, I strenuously object to being dragooned.
Of course. Any man of spirit might. The bridegroom has a right to have a voice in the matter. I will give you until dawn to make up for lost time till we proceed with the ceremony.
Well, here's not so pretty a state of affairs. And the word affair is strictly used. For evidently the remorseless Sire de Maletroit is convinced that his niece has brought the threat of dishonor on his name. A threat we might treat more lightly today, but 400 years ago, one lived by different standards, and the punishment for overstepping rules was more disastrous. A woman's virtue, if profaned, meant instant and unpleasant death. I'll return shortly with Act 3.
Inside you're free after all. You hear freedom spirit like a wild bird call. Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all. Living free. Living free.
There's a long stretch of open road before you, and you're at the controls of a Buick Century, a really fine mid-sized car. Comfort abounds. A sophisticated suspension system is smoothing the way. And under hood, a frugal V6 engine economically goes about its business. You're happy, you're free, and you're in a Buick.
Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all. Living free. Living free. Living free.
This is Arnold Palmer. In golf, we call someone who plays exceptionally well a champ, and a champ works to win. His whole way of life is geared to that talent, that ability in him which makes him win. Well, that's one way of living, but there are others. And the March of Dimes offers us some of those ways. Ways to work to prevent birth defects, or ways to help kids born with birth defects. For many of those kids, a way of life is a difficult direction to discover. But for most of us, it's not. By us, I mean young people, middle-aged people, senior citizens, everyone. As honorary national chairman for the March of Dimes, I can tell you that the greatest gift you can give any handicapped child is a little understanding, a little encouragement, and a chance to appreciate life. Won't you help? Join the March of Dimes today and find a way of life.
In the small chapel in the Maletroit Chateau, the light flickers vagrantly across the faces of the four who stand there. Shadowed, the Saturnine priest belies his garments, looking like some vulpine devil. As the light plays across the sire's face, that comically evil smile seems even more mocking. As for Dennis and Blanche, the one is white with astonishment, the girl blushing with embarrassment.
Cher oncle, you cannot be in earnest.
Indeed I can, and am.
I declare before God I will stab myself rather than be forced on that poor young man.
I assure you, you will not have the opportunity.
Oh, mon oncle, pity me. There isn't a woman alive in France that would not rather die than have such a marriage forced upon her. Is it possible that you do not believe me? That you still think this is the man?
Frankly, I do. But let me explain to you once and for all, Blanche de Maletroit, that when you took it into your head to dishonor my family and the name that I have borne, you forfeited any right to question my designs or even to look me in the face.
Oh, my uncle, if you'll only listen.
Not one word more. It is my duty to see you married at once. Out of pure goodwill, I have tried to find your own gallant for you, and I believe I have succeeded. But if I have not, I care not one jackstraw. So let me recommend that you be polite to our young friend, for, damn me, upon my word, your next groom may be less appetizing.
I have watched and listened to all this in puzzled silence. And silence for another reason. In 2 short minutes, watching the emotions that crossed her exquisite face, I felt I had come to know this girl. Her capacity for love, her tenderness, her bravery. No, did I say? More than that. Admire, revere, I love her for all she was. I was already jealous of her unknown cavalier. But that milady had spirit as well, I was soon to discover as the arras closed behind her uncle and the priest. And she whirled upon me with flashing eyes.
Now, what, sir, may be the meaning of all of this?
Well, Lord knows, this house seems to be full of mad people.
Do you count me one of them?
Oh, I did not mean that.
Good. For I can tell you, I am enough in my wits to see that my uncle and yourself have made some monstrous bargain between you.
If you think I'm engaged in some plot without old devil out there, you're beyond your wits. I've no bed to marry with you, nor would I have if you asked me. I'm as much a prisoner in this house as you appear to be.
Then pray, how came you here?
I was on my way from Paris to join my regiment in Alençon and stopped off in this misbegotten town to seek an old acquaintance and spend an evening with him. While he was seeing me back to the inn, we were set upon by a bunch of assassins, and my friend was shot and killed.
Huguenots.
Huguenots, cutthroats, your own night guard, who knows? Seems that everyone is mad in this town. At all events, I took to my heels for my life, made the mistake of turning into your street from which there was no escape. I backed against your door, hoping perhaps to stay unnoticed in the shadow of the portico. To my surprise, it opened with my weight, and naturally I stepped in, only to have it closed by some mechanism beyond my comprehension. When I tried to open it, there was neither latch nor handle nor any means to accomplish that.
Well, of course. That's what Jean and the other ironmongers were working at down there all evening. It wasn't you they expected to trap, but...
Who? Who?
The cause of all this. Oh, please, I know not your name, but please forgive me for what I said before.
Oh, mademoiselle, the longer I spend with you, the more I could forgive you everything.
Oh, don't jest with me, please. It is all my fault that you are caught as you are. Oh, what can I do?
Well, let's make a start by doing what I have done and tell me the answer to all these riddles.
I'm ashamed. And yet, there's so little to tell. I was left an orphan early and have been brought up in this house mainly by the sire himself.
He's not married.
His wife died when I was 14. I've not been very happy since. And that's why 3 months ago, when a young captain began to stand near me every day in church, and I saw that I pleased him.
Why wouldn't you? Go on.
Oh, I'm much to blame. I was so glad that anyone should offer me love that when he pressed me a letter, I took it home and I read it with pleasure. And since that time, he's written me so many. But in the last few, asking me to leave my door open some night so that he might come and talk with me on the stairs. How my uncle came to suspect me, I don't know. But...
They're always idiots with little to do but let their tongues wag.
I suppose so. Well, tonight at Vespers, the captain handed me a desperate note that he was to be transferred. Tonight was his last night, and again he begged that I would leave the door open. And in the carriage, coming home, the sire forced the note from my hand and read it. And when we got home, he ordered me to dress as you see me. And when I would not tell him the captain's name, he must have laid the trap for him into which you fell. I don't know how to apologize or to ask you to forgive me.
Neither is necessary.
Oh, but it is. To have put you, a complete stranger, in such a degrading and embarrassing position. I'm so ashamed.
Mademoiselle, you've honored me with your confidence. It only remains for me to prove myself not unworthy of the honor. I see your uncle is back in his favorite chair.
What are you going to do?
If you will go first and let me follow, I'll show you.
Are you in some haste for the ceremony?
Messire, I believe I have some say in the matter of this marriage. So let me say this at once and for all. I will be no party to forcing your niece against her inclination.
Really?
Had it been offered to me freely, I should have been proud to accept her hand, but it is clear that she is as good as she is beautiful. But as things stand, I have the honor, Messire, of refusing. Why do you smile, sir?
I am afraid that you do not clearly understand your options. Follow me to the window, please. See this rope reeved efficiently through the ring set in the upper masonry? Now mark my words. If you refuse to marry my niece, I shall have you hanged out of this window by sunrise.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Your family may be well enough in its way, de Beaulieu. But if you sprang from Charlemagne himself, I would not permit you to refuse the hand of a Maletroit with impunity.
Oh, for pity's sake, uncle, listen to
this
me.
This is between this young man and myself. Be quiet. The honor of my house has been compromised. I believe you to be the guilty person. At the very least, you're now in the secret.
There are other ways of settling affairs among gentlemen. You wear a sword, which I hear you have used with distinction.
Fermaillot?
Yes, Messiah.
You would be dead out of hand before you reached your sword. And let us not rush anything. You have a good 2 hours to resolve your problem. If you will give me your word of honor to await my return before attempting anything desperate, I shall withdraw my retainers and leave you in privacy.
You have my word of honor.
I declare, monsieur, the more I see of you, the better I think of you. Well, come, chaplain, we have excess baggage for the moment. But marry you shall, or dangle from yonder ring.
You shall not die. You shall marry me, after all.
I've been trained for knighthood, madam. Think you for a moment I stand in fear of death?
But I cannot have you slain for a mere scruple.
You underrate the difficulty. What you may be too generous to refuse, I may be too proud to accept. In a moment of noble feeling for me, you forget what you may owe to another.
Oh, mon cher Dieu. How you shame me.
Oh, mademoiselle, please,
no,
please.
No, in God's name. Leave me alone. I can hold it back no longer.
I was in an agony of embarrassment. I cannot bear to see a woman cry. And I was as helpless as a babe. I looked at Blanche and thought how much I had grown to love her. But steal her from another man who was not there to stand and fight?
Monsieur Beaulieu, I want to help you, for you have been so noble. Put it in my power to do something more for you but weep.
What service can I ask of you? You have a sweet nature and overestimate a small service.
I am looking at you and seeing the noblest man I ever met.
Who is to die in a mousetrap? With no more noise than my own squeaking.
I will not have my champion think meanly of himself. You have no cause to hang your head, nor will I mine. Pray, do you not think me beautiful?
Oh, indeed, mademoiselle, I do.
Well, I'm glad of that. And how many men in France have been asked in marriage by a beautiful maiden with her own lips, and who have refused her to her face?
You are very good. You can't make me forget I was asked in pity and not for love.
Can you look in my eyes now and believe that it was for anything but love? I have loved you since the first moment you took my part against my uncle.
As I have loved you.
Oh.
But the captain...
Oh, he means nothing to me. He never did. It was just a contact with the outside world. Good Lord, it's sunrise. Come with me quickly to the window. There, open the arras. The sun is shining. The world is still there. Now, what are we to say to my uncle when he returns?
What you will. Blanche, you have seen whether or not I fear death. If you do care for me, don't let me lose my life in a misapprehension. But make no mistake, I love you better than life itself.
I can offer you your freedom. My uncle would far rather punish or capture the real culprit. If you must escape, the captain's name is René de Parterre.
I never heard the name. And if I did, it is forgotten.
Well, children, have you decided?
Messire de Maletroit, Not by suasion or fear of death, but because I have learned to know the lady and love her. I, Denis, the Mazot de Beaulieu, request the honor of your niece's hand in holy matrimony.
Demi, I had a feeling for you the first moment I set eyes on you. Welcome to the Maletroit family, nephew.
So, once again, and this time for the last time, we close the Sire de Maletroit's door on a happy ending. I'll be back shortly.
A few good men. That's what the Marines are looking for. A few good college men who want to lead. Men who have enough on the ball to be eligible for PLC, Platoon Leaders Class. Not everyone can make it. It takes brains. It takes muscle. And summer training is no picnic. It takes men who want a real challenge. A challenge of leading Marine ground troops, flying sophisticated Marine aircraft, or serving as Marine lawyers. If you're one of the few who can make it, there's financial assistance available during school. Up to $2,700 over 3 years. There's even free civilian flying lessons for qualified men. PLC Ground. PLC Air. PLC Law. For a few good men.
For any sentimentalists among the listeners, Captain Parterre had no serious intentions. He was, indeed, trifling with Blanche's innocent affections. Little did he know, nor would he have cared, that he brought two young people to a happy and enduring marriage. The captain died shortly thereafter in a brawl over a gaming debt, which is neither here nor there in our story, except that it's nice to know that every so often, virtue does triumph. Our cast included Michael Wager, William Redfield, Marion Seldes, and Robert Dryden. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Marvelous how you can get around when you've got no body, isn't it?
See him? Little white dog, curly tail.
Oh, silly little thing.
And see that big blue station wagon? It's going to hit him.
Got him, Cynthia. I've saved him.
He'll probably get run over anyhow one of these days.
No, he won't. I'm going to keep my eye on him.
What about all the others?
Them too. And cats and people and everybody. Oh, Cynthia, why did it take me so long to find out what I was born to do? I could have spent my whole life doing this. Cynthia, my afterlife is going to be 100 times more exciting than my life ever was.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Tune for more of your favorite music on KIXI following CBS Radio News. KIXI Seattle, 91 on your AM dial, 96 on FM.
News. The House Ways and Means Committee has completed action on a tax rebate and tax cut bill. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The measure would provide cash refunds for all who paid 1974 income taxes. The maximum refund would be $200. The bill would also result in a cut in withholding taxes for everyone later this year. Chairman Al Ullman of Ways and Means said this about the bill.
I think the Ways and Means Committee has probably accomplished more than it has ever accomplished in its history and in a short period of time. We've sent a signal to the American people that we are responsive, that we are responsible, that we are we know the problems of the country and we're responding to them. Certainly, if the president in any way is criticizing the Ways and Means Committee, I think it's totally unjustified.
Chairman Al Ullman of the House Ways and Means Committee. One major idea behind the administration's proposal to cut taxes was to generate new spending to help pull the nation out of the recession. But a survey by the First National City Corporation says only about 30% of the people say they'll use any tax rebate money to help purchase such items as new cars and furniture. Almost 37% said they'd save the money, 20% said they'd pay off debts, and over 6% said they'd use it for daily living expenses. More news in a moment.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love. But give your cold to contact. The sooner the better.
Sneezing, drips, congestion. What next?
6 or 3 or 1.
Is that an answer or a question?
That's the question when you catch the common cold. For you, the answer is 12-hour contact.
Why?
Well, because you need 6 cold tablets, 2 every 4 hours, or 3 cold pills, 1 every 4 hours, or just 1 contact capsule for up to 12 hours continuous relief of your sneezing, drips, and congestion. The tiny time pills do it. For aches and fever, the others contain aspirin.
And contact doesn't.
Right. So, 6 or 3 or 1. Your cold, your choice.
I'll take the 1 contact, thank you.
Give your cold to contact. The
6 or 3 or 1. Take contact only as directed.
The government on Friday will release the latest unemployment figures. The jobless rate is expected to show an increase. The Associated Press says the figures will probably show the rate of unemployment has soared past the peak of the 1957-58 recession and may have set a new post-World War II record. The government of Peru says a policeman strike, which triggered bloody rioting in the capital city of Lima, has been settled, but sporadic gunfire was heard Thursday, and Peruvian army troops were out in force against looting and other disorders. One news service reports at least 47 persons were killed in the trouble. Ailing Greek millionaire Aristotle Onassis has arrived in Paris for medical treatment. Peter Kalischer reports.
The small gray man, gray hair, gray top coat, with the deep pouches under his eyes, was helped out of the big Mercedes-Benz sedan in front of 88 Avenue Foch as a dozen cameramen lit up the darkness with flashes. Greek shipping magnate Aristotle Onassis, who was supposed to be dying, walked through the crush, parted for him by a burly man with sandy hair, and disappeared into his apartment house building. He had flown in from Athens on a private jet, suffering from the after effects of influenza, which weakened his heart. Half an hour after his arrival at number 88, wife Jacqueline drove up with Onassis' daughter Christine. They had arrived on a commercial flight. Newsmen mobbed the car to a standstill, and it was minutes before she could get out and make her way in to join her husband. Peter Kalischer, CBS News, Paris.
President Robert McNamara of the World Bank said Thursday night that hundreds of thousands of people around the world will probably die in the next 5 or 10 years. McNamara says the most likely victims are poor people living in Africa, India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Now this.
Dorella Perea grew up in New Mexico, and she remembers when her Mexican heritage was something you didn't bring to school.
If they caught us speaking Spanish, they would punish us.
Some kids got to stand in trash cans, and some kids got the rulers on their knuckles for speaking Spanish in school. Actually, they made us feel very badly about our language and about our culture and about the way we dressed, the way we talked, the way we looked.
MALDEF, a grassroots legal defense group, assisted by the Campaign for Human Development, took their case to court and won. Now, Dorella Perea is a teacher, and her students can be proud of their Mexican heritage.
They think, I must be pretty good if I come into this room and my teacher says that we can do tortillas and we can make sopaipillas and we have la raspa dance.
People helping people. People helping themselves. Campaign for Human Development. The United States Catholic Conference.
Officials at Cape Canaveral, Florida, say that a weather satellite launched late Thursday has gone into the proper orbit. Eventually, the satellite will be placed in a stationary orbit over the Pacific Ocean. The satellite is intended to improve weather forecasting and give a longer warning to those in the path of oncoming tornadoes. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
The time, 6 minutes past 11. Temperature at 41 degrees downtown, 40 at the airport.